KVU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Two Rivers, One City, Tuesday, September 9th, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Charles Jordan Community Center in Portland. The Willamette and the Columbia Rivers provide sustenance, recreation, and economic benefits to our region. Yet these rivers are burdened with the legacy of industrial pollution and threatened with the future of toxic contamination. The Two Rivers, One City event will bring a broad network of river users together to share their stake in clean water. The event will include an overview of the various environmental justice issues related to the Portland Harbor Superfund cleanup and the oil by rail projects along the Columbia. Again, that's Two Rivers, One City, Tuesday, September 9th at the Charles Jordan Community Center, 9009 North Foss Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kvu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Today on Flashpoints, we take a closer look at U.S. intelligence policy in Syria with former CIA analyst Ray McGovern. Then we turn our attention back to Haiti, where former President Jean-Bertrand Aristide continues to be under attack by the U.S.-backed regime of Michel Martelly. I'm Kevin Pina, filling in for Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints, your daily investigative news magazine. Stay tuned. Listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, and I'm Kevin Pina, filling in for Dennis Bernstein. Well, I wanted to just address the situation in Syria, which is growing ever more strange day by day. One minute we've got the CIA backing so-called rebels against Bashar al-Assad's government through Turkey. We know that they were backing the so-called moderate rebels. We also understand and have heard several reports that have been filed that a lot of the arms and munitions and support that the CIA was giving to the so-called moderate rebels has ended up in the hands of ISIS, ISIS being the new boogeyman there, the jihadist elements that are raging through Iraq and now are giving great challenges militarily. We're hearing on the ground to the forces of the Syrian military. Now, of course, there's also talk that there may be capitulation of some sort or some sort of detente with Bashar al-Assad so that they can sort of pull the enemy of my enemy is my friend strategy. And it would be interesting to note and to hear from somebody who would know how this shift in intelligence may be occurring. And so I want to invite our next guest, Ray McGovern. Ray McGovern was an analyst with the CIA for more than two decades. Ray, welcome back to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio.
Thank you, Kevin.
So, Ray, what's your take on this? I mean, is the CIA schizophrenic here? I mean, are they really running crazy? Or are they just doing their job developing as many options on behalf of us little old souls called the American people in that region?
Well, I think you have to look to John Kerry and his very adroit statesmanship here. I say that in jest, obviously. It was just a year ago that he had us almost at war with Bashar al-Assad, the president of Syria, because he said that the moderate rebels, the moderate people who were trying to overthrow Bashar al-Assad, were on the march and they were gaining strength. Nobody believed that. John Kerry tends to make things up, and that was completely wrong. Also wrong, and this is important, also wrong was exactly 2 years ago, August 30, 2013, John Kerry got up at the State Department about 3 o'clock in the afternoon and claimed 35 times that the Bashar al-Assad government was responsible for the chemical attacks outside Damascus on the 21st of August in 2013. Now, he said, I know, we know, we know, or some variant of that 35 times. So he lied. I mean, you know, in Washington, we don't usually say that. He prevaricated or he didn't tell the truth 35 times because he didn't know. And what's known since, and what Cy Hirsch has helped us to know by his excellent investigative reporting, is that it was almost certainly the rebels. the rebels, who we knew had sarin gas at the time. And it was a combination of my former colleagues on the analytics side of CIA and DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, and the Joint Chiefs of Staff in the person of General Morton Dempsey, who went to the president the evening after Kerry made all these charges and saying that the president really had to attack Syria now because Syria had violated his red line against the use of chemical weapons. They went to the president and said, look, Mr. President, it's not at all clear that Kerry is telling the truth here. He doesn't know. We don't know, but we do hear from the British that the sarin used in these attacks is not the same sarin that we know is in Syrian government stocks. Besides that, the CIA people had lots of indications that it was actually the Turks and others who were helping the rebels to stage this incident to provoke, to mousetrap Obama into firing his missiles at Syria, and it almost worked. So when we get back to what Kerry says, and you know what he says as convenience of the moment, right now, you know, it's I guess ISIS that's the problem. And let me spin out for you a kind of scenario that would be funny if it weren't so serious. We gave lots of weaponry to the Baghdad government, didn't we? And when ISIS came in and the Peshmerga, the Kurds...
To the government in Iraq. Yes, we did. We armed them.
Yeah. And guess what happened? When those four divisions up there in the north of Iraq, when they were attacked by, you know, this motley group of ISIS and the Kurds, they dropped their weapons. Four divisions fled. And so that's why ISIL has all these great weapons. Now, what's happened to the weapon now? Well, U.S. flights, U.S. air attacks have destroyed the U.S.-made weapons that we gave to the Iraqi government, okay? Now what are we doing? Well, now we're giving still more weapons to people who will be, any people who would be fighting ISIS, who are not the moderates, mind you. It's, you know, the only people who profit from all this, Kevin, are the arms merchants, the arms manufacturers, the people who profiteer on tensions and hostilities of this kind. Is this a great country or what? Is what I'm tempted to think, as Ollie North used to say. But the people who are making it big here are the people with the weapons. And Kerry, frankly, doesn't seem to know what he's doing. I wish he'd stay home and kind of run the library at the State Department.
Well, let me remind our listeners, you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, and that's the voice of my guest, Ray McGovern. We're discussing Syria and possible outcomes there and possible role of the CIA. Ray was a CIA analyst for more than two decades. Well, Ray, you know, it's interesting because there's a lot of curious things that happen, such as 200, you know, a convoy, a huge convoy of 200, you know, Humvees and trucks, open pickup trucks with large caliber weaponry, you know, designed into them. You know, those things I'm talking about, you know, where they strap those 50 calibers on the back of those pickup trucks and, you know, shoot out the back. But 200 of them purportedly had crossed over from Syria into Iraq as part of that invasion that took over Mosul and challenged the Iraqi troops. Is there any way that the CIA didn't know that that was happening?
Well, you know, if they didn't, they should be finding another job. You know, when we invest $85 billion, that's billion with a B, in collecting intelligence on hotspots like this, it is virtually inconceivable to me to think that the CIA didn't know what was going on there.
Because, you know, the Obama administration, you know, there were these headlines. They were surprised that ISIS showed up so strong inside of Iraq and challenged the Iraqi military. I mean, you know, that was in the New York Times and several other major, you know, major newspapers.
Well, you know, policymakers often feign surprise, even though they've been forewarned several times by intelligence professionals. We, even those of us who were retired at the time, knew that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. We kept trying to tell the president that. And, of course, when Bush found out that there were none, he feigned surprise and said, as to his dying day, he'll say, oh, That was a terrible mistake. Terrible intelligence failure. Well, guess what?
Oops.
It wasn't intelligence. It was fraud. It was fraud perpetrated by George Tenet, the head of the CIA, at Bush's and Cheney's direction. That's much worse than an intelligence mistake. So we have similar situations here where the intelligence is almost certainly better than the administration let on.
Well, now, what about this this talk now of possibly the enemy of my enemy becomes my friend? ISIS is the bigger threat. Therefore, we have to reexamine U.S. positions toward Bashar al-Assad and possibly cooperate militarily in order to take out the bigger threat.
Well, the latest pronouncements out of Washington is that will never happen. We may have a common enemy, but we're not going to coordinate things. We're not going to give intelligence to Bashar al-Assad, even though he's fighting ISIL like we are. Well, you can take that with a grain of salt. The big problem here, Kevin, is that we've made Bashar al-Assad into kind of a tar baby, okay? Now, 3 years ago, in her wisdom, Hillary Clinton said, Bashar al-Assad has to go. He's got to go. 2 years ago, Barack Obama said, Bashar al-Assad has to go. Now, Brahimi convened the various sides in Geneva, the rebels and Bashar al-Assad's representatives, but guess what they insisted be the first agenda item? Bashar al-Assad has to go. So Assad's folks were being asked to, you know, sort of manufacture or ease the withdrawal of Assad. He's not going to go. And so there is some hope here that finally these people who love the rhetoric and don't know what they're talking about, namely Hillary Clinton, and in this case, Barack Obama, and John Kerry, of course, they're going to have to trim their sails if they go on, if they have any decency at all and want to stop the carnage in Syria. They got to work with Bashar al-Assad. They can't keep trying to overthrow him. So there is some hope here that having a common enemy, even though the United States will never admit they'll cooperate with Bashar al-Assad, after the months go by, it could be that they'll adopt a more sensible policy because, after all, he's the strongest guy in Syria still, despite all our efforts.
And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, and that's the voice of my guest, Ray McGovern, who served as a CIA analyst for more than two decades. Well, Ray, also, I'm interested, you know, I've heard some people actually propose that, it's ultimately ISIS, ISIL. I've been reading articles about what's the difference, and there seems to be very little. It's just a difference of nuance here. But some people have actually implied that this may be a creation of the intelligence community, that there might be something more nefarious behind this new boogeyman called ISIS or ISIL, alternately.
Well, Kevin, these kinds of things have ample historical precedent. Guess who created Hamas? The Israeli intelligence service. Guess who created Al-Qaeda? The Pakistanis and the CIA. And so these things do have a way of coming back to bite you big time.
Now, there's created is in intentionality and actually organizing from scratch. And then there's created as in manipulating a situation that results in a particular social force emerging. Which created do you mean?
Good question, Kevin. I mean the former with respect to Hamas. PLO is gaining strength. They were a secular organization. The Israelis said, oh, hey, let's create a very religious, fanatical organization to play them off, to divide and conquer, and that's the way it is to this very day. With respect to Al-Qaeda, well, you know the situation in Afghanistan where we decided to give the Russians a bloody nose. Al-Qaeda became not only our friend, but the chief recipient of our arms. Osama bin Laden was part of that operation. And when the war was over, they ended up in a much stronger position, able to threaten us as they did, of course, on 9/11. So what I'm saying here with respect to Syria, I would not be at all surprised to find ISIL or ISIS or the Islamic State or whatever they call themselves possessed of all manner of U.S. weaponry. Whether from people we gave it to, from Libyan stocks, Recall our ambassador that was killed by dealing with the Turks to get those stocks into Syria, or whether they're gathered up from the Baghdad troops running away. Sure, they have lots of U.S. weaponry. Right now, things do change, and I would be shocked to think that even the CIA would be given orders to cooperate with ISIL in any way.
Well, Ray, I've got to wonder, because before this so-called, and I don't know how to even begin to check the veracity or credibility of the term Arab Spring, if you will, the region looked very different, you know, before the U.S. invasion and occupation of Iraq, the region looked very, very different. Now, Saddam Hussein was a strong man. You know, he was authoritarian for sure, but he was a secularist. He kept the different warring factions, you know, through his iron fist all together as a country. There was a cohesion politically in that country. And we can also say that the Iraqis enjoyed one of the highest standards of living and benefits of an infrastructure that was almost incomparable in the region prior to the U.S. bombing it and destroying it and then occupying it. And of course, the fractionalism that occurred as a result. And now we've got Bashar al-Assad, who in many ways I think is very different than Saddam Hussein and not comparable when it comes to the level of authoritarianism, although that U.S. foreign policy is trying to paint him that way. But my point is this. There seemed to be an accommodation that lasted for a long period of time with U.S. policy and secular strongmen in the region. Now, with the support and shift, I don't know if it's at the intelligence community,